That's so political. We don't talk about politics here. Stop being so political. Have you heard that before? When someone brings up a topic that may have been mentioned in the news or on social media, or maybe you've even been the one that said it. But here's a question. Have you ever heard it explained what exactly political means in this context, or maybe even thought about why we shouldn't supposedly talk about it?
I love this because here at Dear White Women, we'd argue that there is no such thing as political. Or conversely, perhaps everything is political depending on who you are and how things affect you. But regardless of why people feel things are too political, and I hope you can hear those air quotes, this is exactly the year where we need to be doubling down on talking about all of those things, especially if you care about freedom, and in particular, your own. Even if you disagree with us, please listen in. Maybe we'll provide some food for thought. Or maybe our viewpoints are not so far apart after all.
Welcome to the Dear White Women podcast, the show that helps white women use their privilege to uproot systemic racism without centering themselves in the process. We are your biracial, Japanese and white hosts, Sarah and me, Sasha.
So since we started with questions, Sarah, I want to ask you, what do you think when you hear people say, stop being so political?
That's a great question. I mean, strictly speaking, my understanding is that politics refers to anything relating to the government or the public affairs of a country.
Yes, I love that you start with like the definition of political. I love it.
And you know, I actually pulled this from our book. So I know it passed muster with the editors. Like, this is literally what people refer to when they talk about politics. So I lifted this from our book. No copyright issues here because it's our darn book. But yeah, so it's anything relating to the government or public affairs, including those controversies that are debated within the political system. And we're talking everything from divisive social issues like abortion or taxation or government spending to things like foreign policy and free trade and the regulation of pollution and more. And at some point in this list, you may have just sort of paused and eye-rolled them in like that's a heavy list. But really, when I hear people say, stop being so political, I instantly picture a dinner table of some sort, whether that's a family gathered around it or you're out with friends for a drink, you know, something real comes up, not like where you want to go on your next vacation or the cool new gadget someone found, but something profound that actually has an impact on someone's real life. And usually that phrase, stop being so political, makes it feel like we're not really willing to go there, to be real, to be thoughtful, to connect on a meaningful level beyond superficial notions of like a good, easy night out. And I'm not saying you can't have those nights, but I feel like I'm hearing this stop being so political thing taking over. Like it's becoming too much of the norm where we're not having thoughtful conversations and we sort of skirt along without much depth to our connections and our conversations. So that's what I hear. All of those things are the things I hear and feel when you ask me that question. What about you? Me, Sasha.
I love that because, I can visually sort of picture that scenario. And I think for me, the concept of saying, stop being so political is like the polite way of saying, please stop talking about stuff I don't want to talk about. I think the bigger question is, why don't we want to talk about it? And, Sarah, I think you talked about some of those things, like maybe we don't want to get that deep with each other. Or is it because we're afraid of difficult conversations? And asterisk, if so, we've got a guide on how to have those conversations back in episode 234. Or is it out of a fear that we just don't know enough to offer an opinion on a particular topic?
I can feel that, right? I think a lot of people feel like, but I just don't know enough and someone's going to know more, so I shouldn't even start.
Yeah. Or I think, is it from a lack of interest or intellectual curiosity, or on some deeper level, an underlying assumption that the status quo is how it is and always will be? I don't know, right? I'm just throwing these questions or these ideas out, and we can probably ask these questions forever. But I think this whole episode is about why we need to be talking about just these topics this year. And I think, we have to come back to the fact that this isn't just any year. As we had to go on record again to say, this is likely the most important election year of our lifetimes to date. And I'm adding to date because clearly we said
This in
that in 20.
2020.
Yeah. So I'm just going to qualify that to date. Hopefully, this is the last time we're saying this, right, in the same way, because of what it means for the trajectory of our country. And by that, I'm specifically talking about freedom. Do we want it? Or I guess the bigger question, and I know there's a lot of questions, I get it, but I think it's important to ask ourselves this. Do we want it enough to really talk about it?
Can I interrupt for a second on that? Because I feel like it's interesting you say this about freedom. And I think we're talking about it in one way. And oftentimes when people talk about freedom, we're hearing it from the other side. If there is a side, this other side of like, you know, the government is intruding on our freedoms. We don't have freedom. Make America great again, this sort of thing, because the government's taken away our freedoms. We are agreeing that we need to actually be looking at our freedoms, but it's in a completely different way than I think mainstream media and some of the loud voices have had you think about your freedom to this date, right? Like the freedom for parents to have an influence on their kids' education and then the parents coming in and limiting what kids are learning. That's actually not what we're talking about when we're talking about these freedoms. I think you're talking about something in a very, even more profound and very, very dangerous way in a very fundamental human level.
Yeah. And I appreciate that distinction because I think when we talk about freedom, or in this instance, right, when we're talking about freedom and for centuries, right, if we are thinking that America was founded on this concept of religious freedom from persecution, right, from the ability to practice your religion, and which I mean is one version of the story, but, you know, it was also about having land and title for white men who weren't necessarily going to get that in England due to not being the first sons in their families. But anyway, okay, I digress. And if we're thinking about America as being on this, founded on this concept of give me liberty or give me death, then freedom in its like truest sense should be a concept that we really can all get behind. So in order to like kind of bring this home or provide an example, Sarah, do you remember our little Johnny from a few weeks back who was the former president? I mean, former elementary school student council president who incited a takeover of the principal's office when he lost that next student council election?
Absolutely, I remember. How could you forget Johnny?
Right. Well, let's bring him back. You know, he's so memorable. So this time, like, let's say that Johnny's in middle school, okay? His parents have a bunch of money and basically bought his way into a private school so that he would be able to stay in school. Because remember, like, threat of expulsion, you know, you incite all sorts of bad things. Anyway, lucky Johnny. So now there's a new cafeteria named after Johnny's family at this school. Anyway, right? At this school, Johnny has another problem, right? So there are a lot of cliques at this school. I mean, hello, middle school, right? And while most of them seem to get along pretty well with each other, I mean, you've got your drama kids, your hockey players, your mathletes, you get the picture. There is one kid named Paul, who's the leader of one of the biggest cliques, the rugby clique. I mean, okay, like we're in a very diverse school here with lots of sports funding, okay? Anyway, Paul is perhaps even meaner than Johnny. We're not sure if that's actually the case, but he's got a lot of rugby kids who are his muscle, and he seems, you know, tactically smarter than Johnny. He's also been in middle school for a suspiciously long time, and everyone's heard the rumors about the rugby competitors that Paul disliked and then, you know, suspiciously dropped out of rugby or hadn't been seen at games recently. So this all comes to a head in the lunchroom in the new cafeteria, as each clique has their own table to sit at. And generally speaking, because each clique wants to keep its own table, it doesn't try and sit at other people's tables because it knows that it will come back to them in the end, right? So Johnny's found his crew, in case you were wondering. It is the speech and debate group. And Johnny's the loudest because he likes to hear himself speak. For the speech and debaters out there, his specialty is impromptu, because he can just spout off at the mouth and doesn't have to worry about small things like facts, right? Anyway, so the speech and debaters also claim a fairly large table. In fact, their table is like really large and in a prime location. And up until Johnny's arrival, the speech and debate clique was, you know, pretty friendly with all the other groups and kind of side-eyeing Paul and his crew, but still managed to maintain a normal relationship. You know, that is, until Paul decided that, you know what, he wanted not only his table, but the swim team's table, which he felt used to belong to the rugby crew, like way back at some point. So in order to check Paul's power, the other groups had mostly entered into a middle school alliance. I mean, if you've been in middle school, you have an idea of how this works, right, with each other, and said that, you know, if Paul and the rugby team goes after one of our tables, all the rest of us are going to stand up against Paul. And that like threat has largely kept everyone, you know, read Paul, in check, but it's not working now because Paul's crew slowly starts sitting at the swim team's table. And this time, the swim team fights back, and most everyone in the lunchroom is with them as they push the rugby players off their benches. But, you know, this seems to go on for like a long time, and the other kids realize this may be like a long fight. That said, if Paul wins, they know he's coming for their tables next. All right, Sarah, you still with me?
I am. I'm picturing this very, very clearly in my head, and I'm excited to see where you're going to take it.
Okay. Well, so remember how I said that if Paul wins, most of the cliques know that he's coming for them next, with kind of an exception, not Johnny, right? Well, because in fact, Johnny secretly, or really not so secretly, admires Paul and doesn't necessarily see what's so bad about what Paul is doing. I mean, isn't this the role of a dictator? We mean captain of a school team, take what should be theirs. And because Johnny didn't think the other groups were really investing enough in this like mutual alliance, some might call it a joint defense plan, like they weren't sending enough help to the swim team or really caring about the alliance that much in general, in Johnny's opinion. So when the school paper asked Johnny, let's like suspend disbelief and yeah, like they want to hear his opinion. When the school paper asked him his thoughts about what was going on every day in the lunchroom, Johnny said that, you know, regarding the groups that he felt weren't helping defend the swim team enough, that Paul should be able to do whatever the heck he wanted with their tables. The school paper, recognizing a highly divisive quote when they saw it, immediately published it. And everyone had an opinion about Johnny's impromptu speech this time. But guess what? Johnny's running for student council president again, and he means every single word that comes out of his mouth.
I love the Johnny stories. And for those of you who have followed along, thank you again. Depending on when this episode comes out, Trump's pro-Putin stance may have blown up even larger than it did when he made this comment back in February regarding Putin, when he said that countries in NATO who weren't spending enough money in defense were fair game for Putin to, direct quote, do whatever the hell he wants with, end quote, them. Right? In no other realm would a presidential candidate be able to say that and not be immediately disqualified for running for basically what amounts to treason. But hey, it's 2024 and we're not in any normal realm, and Trump is still running for president. The thing is, this wasn't the leading story on many American news networks.
Right, because remember when I texted you, Sarah, about this, you hadn't heard about it yet. And this was about 24 hours after he said that. And I think we're two people who are pretty up on the news at any given time. So can you imagine how quickly this comment was buried or never came to light for many, many other people?
Totally. And if we're, as a society, not being, quote, political, right, how are we even going to know who or what we're really supporting? In the case of Trump, if you care about foreign policy or America's position vis-a-vis the world or American national security, you need to know right now that he does not care. Because saying something like that and effectively encouraging Putin to attack American allies puts American servicemen and women in danger immediately throughout the world. If you have a family member who's deployed, Trump just put your loved one in danger. And he is going to do this if he is president. We talk a lot about the military protecting our freedom at home and abroad. If you care about this freedom, this will effectively be gone the minute Trump gets into the White House. Okay, but maybe the military is not something you care about, or maybe you have conflicting views about NATO or American imperialism or colonialism, which fine. All right, we understand that. But it's not just this freedom that's affected. Because here's another one. Are you a woman? Do you know and love women? Did you have kids through IVF or know somebody who did, or maybe you're contemplating IVF or going through it right now? More broadly, if you take a step back, do you think that women should have control over their bodies? I mean, really, did you think that Roe v. Wade would be overturned in your lifetime? I mean, I know that's a lot of questions, but if bodily autonomy is important to you, you should know that it is not important to MAGA Republicans or to Trump.
Can I add something right here, actually?
Please.
So if you have heard Tommy Tuberville talk about this, I think it's not only not important to MAGA Republicans, but they also cannot get away from the inherent conflict that exists between being pro-life and trying to eliminate IVF, right? Because when he was asked about this, he was talking about the strong Republican stance and being pro-life and was asked, Well, in that case, and you know, in Alabama, where women are clinics are closing, women are not able to have the children that they are trying to have. How do you reconcile that? And he couldn't. And I think that is the whole, like, the emperor has no clothes thing. There is no policy. There is no basis for this policy, right? It is directly contradictory. And we have to be talking about that.
Thank you for adding that. I think, you know, you see the memes flying around. Like you said, it's not a consistent policy. It's not well thought out. What they're saying is bodily autonomy is something just to be controlled by the state, right? Which sounds kind of familiar. Maybe some popular book and TV series that are going on. Yeah. So if you value this freedom, which is already disappearing due to a conservative Supreme Court and Trump being kind of like the effective Speaker of the House at this point, that freedom will be effectively gone the minute Trump gets into the White House. Now, say you don't want to talk about whether women deserve to have control over their bodies and whether women are equal and are humans, right? Okay. So, or what constitutes a human being outside of the human body? Okay. How about climate change, right? Do you care about emissions? How about, I don't know, breathing clean air? Did you know that more than 125 million Americans will be exposed to unhealthy levels of air pollution by 2054, which is the blink of an eye, is a result of climate change, according to a new report, right? After decades of successfully reining in pollution from smokestacks and tailpipes, thanks to regulations like the 1970 Clean Air Act, climate change-related events are expected to cause a steady deterioration in American air quality through 2054. The study finds that extreme heat, we're talking droughts, and wildfires are increasing the prevalence of ozone and things flying in the air, like particulate matter. And right now, about 83 million Americans, which is 1 in 4, are already exposed to unhealthy air quality every year, right? That's not just a nice to have. Unhealthy air affects our bodies, affects our ability to function. And by that point in 2054, more than 125 million Americans are going to be exposed to at least one day of unhealthy air quality each year. 11 million will face at least one day of unhealthy air quality, and 2 million will be exposed to at least one day of hazardous air quality. So given that, do you care about continuing to breathe clean air or have the hope of fighting so maybe it doesn't get worse? Because if you remember, Trump basically doesn't believe in climate change or the Paris Accords, which means international cooperation around climate, because it's not just, oh, I emit pollution and it just exists over my roof. It affects our towns, our cities, our states, our countries, and our fellow nations all around the world, right? Climate change cannot be dealt with by one country alone. But if also it means that if we deny that it exists, it's going to get worse. Is that what you want for your kids and your grandchildren? I kind of feel a little down now, but before this brings us all down, you might be wondering, what's the point of talking about all of this? That is the point. If we don't talk about what some may consider to be political, then we don't understand what freedoms that we have right now that may be in serious jeopardy by the end of the year or maybe gone completely, right? Everyone has certain freedoms that are important to them personally that we may have taken for granted. Policy makes our future. At one point, we didn't even have weekends, but policy changed to allow us to have a work week. Like, things have been put in place to give us the life we have right now. And if we don't stop taking them for granted, if we don't really examine them, discuss them, and take a stand for them, they may be gone very soon, especially because we have someone out there, Trump, who is very clearly telling us that we cannot take any one of these for granted if he's elected.
You know, and this brings me back to what we were talking about 4 years ago, right? Where we were very specifically talking about voting for something, right? And I think we are still talking about it, but this year, that something is freedom. As you so eloquently articulated, Sarah, if you value freedom, right? For yourself, for others, if you value the ability to make decisions for your own body, your own family, your own community, then you have to keep talking about what is political, which, I mean, at this point is basically everything. Because we've got a candidate out there who would like us to stop talking about all of that, as that's what authoritarians or dictators hate the most, dissent. So get loud. We've got to get louder than the voices that would shut us down. Because in the end, it's all of us or none of us.
You've just listened to the Dear White Women podcast with your hosts, Sarah and me, Sasha. Yes, we're on social media. And yes, you can hire us to do talks about our book. But the biggest thing, don't forget to sign up for our newsletter to receive our free materials. Head over to dearwhitewomen.com to get on the list.